You open the fridge. There's nothing there. So what's it gonna be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-through burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein. No artificial flavors or colors. No chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
We came here in Philadelphia and lost to CCP, Community College of Philadelphia, and we didn't play well at all. Like, that might have been the worst game we played, and I think the score was 62-59. And I was just so mad at them guys, but I got home, watched the game about two or three times, and I realized it wasn't them, it was me. And that's when I became a better coach, just being able to right my wrongs before I go to them.
And our guest this week is Mike Green. He is the head men's basketball coach at Salem Community College down in South Jersey. He's been there since December of 2023. His squad coming off a phenomenal season. He was a great player in his own right. Philadelphia fans probably remember him from Franklin Learning Center. And Mike, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about this past season. 28 wins, fifth place at the national tournament. How much fun was this season?
It was a blast, man. It was a blast. We went to some territories that the school never been before, and it happened so fast. Just like you said, was hired December 2023, and that was half of the season. And just to come around and get some more additions to our team and being a national champ, being a national tournament, 8 months later is a big time accomplishment.
When you came on board, season had already started.
Yes.
The 23-24 season.
Yes.
So what is that like walking in saying, hey, how you doing? Let's go. We got a game tonight.
Yeah. And it was literally like that. Just a challenge, man. Looking at it as a challenge. And I walked into a team that only had 8 players at the time. 7 was playing, 1 was hurt. So it was a little difficult. Couldn't even play 5-on-5, man. We had to play full court 3-on-3. Some nights I had to jump out there. So it was rough. But that team gave me a lot. They gave me all they had, man. And I think we ended up winning 9 games and losing 9 with me there.
So then you go from that to this season, 28 wins, as I mentioned, the national tournament. What flipped? What changed?
I think those 18 games gave me an idea of what I needed to, what players I needed around to be successful. And then as far as the staff as well, we put together a really good staff as well, former basketball players, former Philadelphia guys. So I think the staff changed and definitely the talent of players we got there. I think we got some guys that, you know, could have played anywhere in junior college, Division I, Division II, could have played, had their picks. They were more sold on us as a staff, me as a head coach, and it worked wonders for us.
Was there a point along the season when you really got a good feeling that this group was capable of big things, like a game or a practice where you just either felt it come together or felt the group take a giant step forward?
Well, it definitely was rocky. We had guys get injured. We had guys ineligible. We knew we would be a really solid team just from knowing the landscape, the teams we were up against. So I knew we would be solid. But once those guys got healthy, Akeem Taylor and Jaheim Spencer and Tamir Powell, once those guys got healthy, we knew that we were a whole different team. And the guys that were there the first semester that carried us, they did a hell of a job. But once we got those three key elements,
we took it from there. We knew he was going to be really good.
What are some of your favorite memories from this season?
I have to say just seeing a smile on those guys' faces after winning games. Some of them guys wasn't engaged. You know, we got kids that, you know, that didn't play at the Division II level who all but gave up on basketball. But just seeing them to get the feeling back and get the enjoyment back, that was big for me.
When you're dealing with kids, with players like that, what do you do to bring them back? Is it just a matter of making the game fun again? I don't mean to simplify it. I'm sure it's more than that. But is that one of the big things, is just make it fun again for them?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You know, you want basketball to be fun. You sit on a bench for a whole year. I never experienced that myself, but I had teammates that did it. And it's not even easy talking to a teammate, you mean, that's not playing. So just to get them kids back focused, let them know this is a second chance. Junior college get a bad rap, man, but it's really a second chance for a lot of guys. And those guys, they took that second chance and they ran with it. Now them guys got scholarships. They got about five or six schools interested in them. And that's big, man. They didn't even have that coming out of high school. So that's the beauty of it for me.
For people who aren't familiar, the junior college tournament that you guys took part in for the first time in program history, you play several games, and it's not like the NCAA tournament we're kind of used to where once you lose, you're done. You guys actually played in what was like a fifth-place game and got to end the season on a victory after you had lost earlier. Very few teams get to end the season in college basketball on a win. You know, in Division I, it's basically one team. So there was obviously disappointment when you guys lost the game at the tournament, but what does it do to get to play a couple more games and to get to end the season with a victory?
When we lost that game, guys were kind of like down. They were down, honestly. We didn't even realize that if we won, we kept on playing. We thought it was just one more guaranteed game. But we got the news, and it was just like, they was like, oh, man, I just want to go home. It's like, no. Like you just said, not too many teams finish the season with a win. It's not many. To have the opportunity to do that, I told them, guys, this is your last chance in this jersey. Why not win more games? Why not go out with a bang? And them guys rallied, man. They were tired, you know, 4 games in 4 days, but they rallied. We had a complete team effort. We played 12 guys out there. And I got back home and got a chance to watch the game. And, you know, the announcer was like, yeah, they're subbing a lot. They're playing 12 guys. But, yeah, we're playing 4 games in 4 days, you know, and it worked to our advantage. And guys leave as a winner. So it's not that – it's not that sad that we lost that game, because we won 2 in a row after that. So to go out a winner is big time.
What did you learn about yourself as a coach through this?
I learned that I'm pretty good. Honestly, man. Like, I had doubts. You know, if I was doing things, if I was coaching these guys right, and I'm still learning, I'm still getting better. But it's a complete different thing than being on a staff when you're an assistant or you're, as I was at Penn State, player of development. It's a completely different goal when you're in charge of all those things. And I'm learning on the fly, and I think I did a pretty good job this year with the help of my assistants.
When do you feel like during the season you started to hit your stride?
Happened after a loss, actually. We came here in Philadelphia and lost to CCP, Community College of Philadelphia. And we didn't play well at all. Like, that might have been the worst game we played. And I think we turned the ball over 24 times and only made 20 shots. I think the score was 62-59. And I was just so mad at them guys. But I got home, watched the game about 2 or 3 times, and I realized it wasn't them, it was me. And that's when I became a better coach, just being able to right my wrongs before I go to them. So we big on saying something about our word this year was accountability. And a lot of times I held them accountable, told them to hold each other accountable, and it was all towards them. But, you know, I took accountability as well. But at this specific game, it helped me realize that this is what accountability is. And now I'm looking at myself. I'm not going to critique my players. I'm going to critique myself as well. And I think that's the first game I actually did that, and I think I got better since then.
What was it specifically? Was it like the set you were calling, what you were focusing on?
I was just, you know, I was uptight. You know, I was sitting down the whole time. I'm back in Philadelphia, people coming to watch, and I wasn't myself. I didn't challenge the guys enough. You know, I just let it play out. That's not who I am. I'm a little bit more fiery than I was then, and I was that way throughout the rest of the season, and we got good responses from guys.
So you mentioned prior to this you were director of player development at Penn State. Overall in your career, and we'll get to your playing days and a long time overseas, did you always figure you were going to coach, or was this something that once your playing days were over, you wanted to stay in the game?
It's a great question. I was told that I'd be a good coach as I was a player. As a player, you're not really listening. I think it comes more from being a point guard my whole life. And pretty much, you know, as a point guard, you run the team. So it's really similar to being a coach. But, you know, it fits me well, I believe. I think I was meant for it. People tell me that, but now I actually believe it. And I'm here. I like it. I'm loving it. I'm having a great time at Salem Community.
What's your favorite part of coaching, regardless of where, just the idea of coaching?
Just seeing the work that you put in with the players and seeing it come into fruition. I think that's the greatest feeling. Being able to help a guy that's struggling to shoot the ball and, you know, giving them pointers and him seeing it work and him coming back to you, letting you know how excited he is about it. I think that's the best part for me.
Do the wins hit differently as a coach than they did as a player?
That's a great question. I sometimes go on Twitter and talk to myself. Yeah, it's completely different. It was shocking to me at first, but it's completely different. When I went as a player, I was super excited about me and my team. Now, as a coach, I'm just super excited for my players. I've completely removed myself away from it and super excited for the players. So that's the biggest difference, I believe.
How about the losses?
Losses hit harder as a coach. Much harder as a coach. That's another thing that I went on Twitter and talked to myself about. But yeah, they hit harder as a coach because as a former player, there's really not much you can do about it. Physically. So, you know, physically, I can say, oh, I did this wrong. I did that wrong. Sometimes, man, them guys just ain't up to play. Sometimes it's just a bad day and it's really nothing the coach can do about it. So it hit a lot harder as a coach than it did as a player.
So now let's talk about your playing days. I mentioned Franklin Learning Center. Growing up, was basketball number one for you, like as far as sports playing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I fell in love with basketball about 10 years old. Probably was playing a year or two before that. But once I got that first trophy, man, I never looked back. And that was at 10 years old.
Point guard throughout your career, or even growing up?
Yes, sir. Always a point guard, always handling the ball. Probably gave my mom a bunch of headaches dribbling the ball in the house. So, yeah, it's always been point guard for me.
Now, was that something driven by you, or was that something coaches would say, all right, Mike, you're running the point?
Probably a little bit of both. I always just, you know, dribble the ball well from as long as I can remember. That was just a thing I did really well. And I always watched, too. Just watched a lot of basketball. I can watch from, to this day, I can watch and learn something from an 8-year-old. I watch women's basketball. So I'm just always watch a lot of basketball and seeing where as though I can put that into my game. Not just the basketball skills, the mental part of it, too. Just seeing how people react to certain things and so, you know, I've always been a student of the game.
Being from Philadelphia and the time that you're growing up, I probably know the answer to this. Who was your favorite player growing up? Who were you molding your game after?
I wouldn't say molded my game after, but, of course, I was a huge fan of Allen Iverson.
There it is.
You had to be. I did everything but got the breeze. So Allen Iverson, for sure. I was a big fan of Penny Hardaway. Big fan of Jason Kidd. So all my guys were definitely point guards. At the time, but yeah, I can't say I modeled my game after him. He was just so good, man. He was, and at that age, I wasn't the player who I am. Well, who I was later on in life. So, those guys definitely helped me shape my game as well.
When do you start to realize you are good at basketball growing up, and that you might be able to take it further than most?
See, it's a little different. It's a little different to the as it is today. I didn't have you didn't have all these media outlets. You couldn't see how. You couldn't see how Kevin Durant was working out. You couldn't see how Allen Iverson was working out. You couldn't see how Penny Hardaway, Michael Jordan was working out. You couldn't see that. So it's a little different. So I would say that mine came in segments. So in middle school, I only thought about middle school. I didn't think about high school. Once I got to high school, now I was thinking about high school. 12th grade, now I'm thinking about college. Last year of college, now I'm thinking about the NBA. So I think I was more locked in 4-year segments than looking at the larger picture. And I didn't have nobody that was doing that. So I always kept my eyes on in 4-year segments.
You had a ton of success at Franklin Learning Center. What are some of your favorite memories from high school?
Just my teammates. My coach. I'm still Coach Cedric Powell. He still comes to my games to this day. So just the bonds that I built there at Franklin Learning Center. I still hang out with a lot of guys I hang out with high school. So about 10 of us, we still all hang together. We in a group chat. So I guess they're my lifelong friends. So that was big in Franklin Learning Center.
Philadelphia basketball is something unique, I think. Did you realize that as you were growing up, and did it become more crystallized as you traveled the world and you kind of saw what Philadelphia basketball was like? And when I say, I don't just mean the quality of the basketball, I mean the community everybody kind of knows everybody. You know what the teams are doing, stuff like that. Did you kind of get more of an appreciation of it as you traveled and grew up?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Once you leave Philadelphia, you start to get a better understanding of how privileged you are to grow up playing basketball in Philadelphia. Being here, you don't really see it. You just think, hey, I'm better than this guy, I'm better than that guy, this guy not better than me, blah. You know, it's all super competition with the Philadelphia guys. But, you know, a lot of us are privileged to be playing against each other coming up. Great eras of basketball, especially I think mine was really good as well. So I think you realize how privileged you are to have that type of competition homegrown.
Started your college career at Towson, played a couple of years there, transferred to Butler. What was it that first drew you to Towson?
17-year-old kid, wasn't too far from home. That was big for me. I think Dino Presley did a really good job of recruiting me, too. Dino Presley is now in that Rider, I believe. He did a good job of recruiting me. Just the distance was good. The opportunity to come in and play right away was huge. Like I said, I did play, I think I set the record for freshman starts in a game, freshman minutes in a game. So, you know, I played a lot. I got to learn a lot. I got to make mistakes and stay in the game. So I think that was huge for my development.
Did the jump from high school to college seem big as a player, like speed of the game, stuff like that, or were you pretty comfortable?
I was really comfortable. Like I said, I got a chance to make mistakes and stay in the game. And I try to tell my guys that now. The kids that I'm recruiting are the kids that's already with me at Salem. I try to tell them that, you know, you want to go where you can make mistakes and grow. The best offer, the biggest offer is not always the best for you. You want to go where you can go and make a mistake and don't have to look over your shoulder. And I had that at Towson. And like I said, it was great for my development. Not so much for my mental, because we was losing a lot of games, but for my development as a player, I couldn't ask for nothing better.
Mentioned you transferred to Butler. What led to the transfer? Was it that the win-loss was struggling at Towson and maybe obviously a chance to win at Butler?
Honestly, that part of my life was a whirlwind, actually. So I played for Michael Hunt my freshman year. He was fired and Pat Kennedy came in. Big name coach, NBA players, high level. And, you know, I was told things at the beginning of the season and, you know, you could play there. We like you here. And at the end of the year, once we got our butt kicked, I was told that I wouldn't have recruited you as a point guard. You're not really a point guard. You're kind of slow. And, you know, called me in his office and said this to me at the end of the year. And I'm just like, dang, like, you know, I'm still 19 years old. Like, you know, and pretty much all but kicked me out of school, pretty much. And, you know, I think I shed a tear there. Like, I'm not a crier. I shed a tear. And just, he was like, you need me to help you, just let me know. And I was like, no, I'm good. So I actually ended up leaving there and sitting home, not knowing where I was going. You know, the schools in the city showed little interest, but they wasn't pulling the trigger on me. So I sat in my mom's house for about 2 months before I got in touch with Butler. So, you know, I played in the Sunny Hill League and, you know, I had some schools telling me to come down on a train to New York to come play with their players in an open gym, and I wasn't motivated to do any of that. And by the grace of God, you know, I got a phone call from Butler. They came down and checked me out 2 different times. The head coach came to check me out at the Sunny Hill League. Then I had a workout at St. John Newman. The assistant coach came and watched me work out, and I went up there and visited, and, you know, it was a match. And by the grace of God, I ended up at Butler.
How much did that experience kind of help shape you as a player and as a person? Because I'm sure as a young basketball player who had a lot of success, I can only imagine what that conversation with Pat Kennedy is like. What?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Aside from, yeah, you know, how it feels in a moment. But, like, how much did that shape who you are today as far as dealing with adversity, dealing with something kind of being taken away from you that has been a part of almost your whole life? Like, do you look at that as like a flashpoint in your life and in your life in basketball?
I mean, it was his opinion. Like, that's all I took it as. Like, this is your show, it's your opinion. I know I would never do that to none of my players. Not after a year of, you know, having their services. I'll be a little bit better with relaying whatever message it is. Rather than work on this, work on that. But, I had put a chip on my shoulder. I already had one, being from Philadelphia, as we spoke, but that put a chip on the other one. So it was like, I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you, whoever else believe anything you're saying. And, you know, the rest is history. That's what I did.
Now, you transferred in the before times when you actually had to sit out a year,
ancient times of years ago.
Yeah. How did you approach that year of not being able to play games? Was it good for you? Like, was it good from a mental standpoint, mm-hmm, to kind of clear your head?
Mm-hmm.
Would you have rather have just been able to jump in? Mm-hmm. Like, how did you approach it?
That was the it was a tough year, but it probably was the best year of my development outside of my first year at Towson. It may have been more impactful than that. Just seeing the game. I never sat and watched the game. After middle school, I always played. I barely got a chance to watch. And even after that, I never got a chance to watch. So that was the only time in my life I got a chance to watch basketball front and center. And it worked wonders, man. It made me mentally tougher. It let me see the game from a different standpoint. You know, I did everything but play. And being at Butler is culturally it was different. So I learned a lot off the court as well. I learned a lot. I learned a lot my sit out year, and I think that helped shape me who I am too.
And you came to a Butler program that had a ton of success. You were before they made the runs to the national championship, but you were on a Sweet 16 team, correct?
Yes.
Your first year?
Yeah.
So what is that like? You hadn't won a ton at Towson, and then you're not just part of the team, you're a key part of a team that's having success. Like, did it make the success even sweeter?
For sure. Those guys were upset, man, about being 13 and 15. 13 and 15. I think I won 11 games in 2 years. So I was like, hold on. And you could feel it. When I went to go visit, you could feel it at Butler. Like, those guys were really upset about being 13 and 15. Like, it wasn't really – it was welcoming for me, but you could see the looks on, the coaches' faces. But – and that kind of got me riled up. It's like 13 and 15. I could have used that. But, it was a match made in heaven, man. It was a match made in heaven. I got the chance to see the guys that I was going to play with. And once I got out there, as soon as that season went over, I was ready to go. I was ready to go.
We need to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Mike Green coming up. But right now, I want to remind you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to drive smarter with high-tech features and excellent reliability. It's time for intelligent design plus exciting performance. Get a new vehicle you'll love. Check out the Honda Civic, Accord, or HRV. Contact your local Honda dealer today. See dealer for financing details. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Mike Green, head men's basketball coach at Salem Community College in South Jersey. Now, Brad Stevens was not the coach when you first came in there, right? He came in later?
Brad was assistant my first year.
Okay.
So Brad, I think it goes something like that. I think Brad got the call from Coach Brunel, who was down at Clemson. I think it was that. And I think that's how I became, because Coach Brunel was at UNC Wilmington, which is also in the Towson's conference.
Right.
And I think that's how the connection came about. So Brad was the first one to make the call.
So Brad Stevens was your initial contact at Butler.
Brad made the call. Coach Licklider, who was the head coach, came out to check me out at the Sunny Hill League. And after that, Laval Jordan, who was at – he's not at Michigan now. He's at DePaul. He was the one that came and watched me work out. So it was a group effort. Them guys did they homework on me, and the rest was history.
Obviously, Brad Stevens was the head coach when Butler went to the national championship game and became almost a household basketball name. What was he like to play for, to learn from?
Brad was – you want to know Brad as assistant or Brad as the head coach? Because he did.
How about both?
I know both of them. So Brad as assistant, my sit-out year, and he just was in my ear all the time, like, go, 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 go. And we're playing against a couple of guys that went to the Sweet 16 – in 2001, maybe 2001 team. So they were still, a couple of them were still around. And, Brad just, we had a unit that was coming in the next year, about three of us that was really good. And Brad just made sure I kept my foot on the gas pedal as an assistant, always. To the point one time I remember I yelled out some explicits at him because it was so much. I'm like, Brad, you know what I mean? So when he got that head coaching job, that's the first thing he said to me. Yeah, you can't say that to me no more, Mike. So, Brad as a head coach was excellent, man. Like, I just had a conversation with him yesterday and just told him, like, you went from very good to great in record time. Like, he with us, he was very, very good. 2 years later, he was great. So I guess he was learning on the job with us as well.
What was it about him that made him such a good coach? Or it sounds like it was tangible being around him.
Right. Brad was a numbers guy, kind of like, probability, law averages, and those things were true. Like, you probably look at it like, what? What are you talking about? It's BS. And no, the stuff he was saying was true. Law averages is really real. So he'll say things like, if you miss one shot, leave it alone. Your numbers show you what your number's supposed to do. don't miss the same shot twice, things like that. One time we played Ohio State, and I don't know the exact number, but we could have been like 1-for-17 from three, 1-for-20, I want to say. And we're down maybe like 15 at halftime, and we go into the locker room, and, you know, we all sitting there, heads down, you know, trying to figure it out. And he comes in, balls up a piece of paper, throws it in the trash can. And he said, hey, that's it's that easy. We go out there, and we win that game. So that's the kind of guy Brad was, man. Motivator, great with X's and O's. And I wish I got to play for him 3 years later when he was great, but Brad was really, really, really good coach.
You went to the NCAA tournament, I think both years you were Butler.
Yeah.
Second round, 1 year, and we mentioned Sweet 16. Yeah. What was it just like to play in the NCAA tournament?
Amazing. Amazing. The NCAA tournament was amazing. Just from the practices, you got open practices with people in there watching. You got both sides of it. So you got Kentucky over here. You got North Carolina here. You got everybody watching your game. And it's like that feeling I held on as a pro. And, like, I don't think I ever disappointed. After that NCAA tournament, I don't think I ever disappointed in that setting as a professional.
Was it more nerve-wracking, or did it pump you up more?
It riled me up, man. It's like all eyes are on you. And, you know, I kind of my last game, I didn't do as well as I wanted to, and that stuck with me as a pro. So all those settings after that, you know, MVPs and all that type of stuff, just because I had that learning experience and I didn't like the way that felt. So it sucks for us as Butler University, but it definitely changed Mike Green.
So then you go pro, some summer league opportunities, the NBA. I think, did you play for the Sixers summer league one year?
Yeah, Sixers, Cleveland, a couple other ones, Utah, Trailblazers. So I had a couple of them. I had a couple of shots at it in the summer league.
What's the summer league experience like?
Tough. It's tough. You're going 2 days. You got a bunch of guys that you got to gel with in 3 days before you go out there and compete. It's fun though. It was fun, but it's definitely tough.
Did you feel like you were close to making an NBA team?
I think the closest I was my first year, with Cleveland. That at that same time that was happening, I had my first child, so. It was tough, man. It was tough. You know, being a first-time parent, not coming from money, my first thoughts was, I got to find some money. I got to figure this out. Not knowing, you know, from July, you wait all the way to October to get into the NBA camps. I just didn't know where I was going to get money from to take care of my responsibilities. And I had an offer on the table from Europe, Turkey, Antalya, Turkey, and it was too good of an offer to pass down. So I didn't never made it to the camps. I just went straight over to Europe.
So I think you spent a dozen years playing overseas.
Yeah,
is that right?
Like that. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So Turkey's the first spot. I mean, you land in Turkey, kid from Philadelphia, culture shock. Is it like, whoa, or were you pretty comfortable?
Both. Just comfortable because I did travel with my kid. So he was not even a month old in Europe. Passport, you had to hold him up and make faces so he can just open his eyes and smile. So I was comfortable in a way. I was, you know, I learned a lot. I didn't know that it was different money in different places. Like, I had no idea. Like I said, I lived life in 4 year segments, so I didn't even think about it. But it was different, man. It was different. The basketball was even different. So just having to adjust to that and making that my new norm, I think I did pretty well with that.
How was the basketball different, just as far as what they focused on?
Well, at that time, in Turkey, it was a rule that you had to play, you had to have two Turkish players on the court at all times.
Okay.
So it was just like, what? Like, why? Yeah. Like, so it was at a time, like, so the rotations were real different, like real, like, what are you doing? So it was just different at that point. And then, you know, like I said, I only see it for where it's at the moment. And now that I come out of that, like, I learned a lot that year as well. So I learned a lot, man. Every year, like, I'm steady learning, like I said, with the coaching. Like, I'm constantly learning.
Turkey, Belgium, Russia, Greece, France, Italy. Is that all correct? Did I miss anything?
Is that the order?
I don't know if that's necessarily
the order. I was almost the order. That was good.
Every time you start playing in a new country, is it like you are starting over all over again? Because new team, not just new team, but new language, new cultural norms you've got to adjust to, stuff like that. Like, every time, did it feel like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Every time it felt like that. When I got tired of feeling like that, I stayed in Italy for a couple of years. So, it definitely felt like that, the culture shock. A couple of places I went back to, and, you know, it refreshed my memory. So, it was different every time, but not nothing. You get paid enough money to figure it out. So, you know, I figured it out.
I've talked to a lot of guys who have played overseas, and it is amazing the run of experiences to, oh, it was great, and now my family, we go back to Germany every year, it's wonderful, to, well, I had to get out of town before the airport closed because the government was falling. Like, did you have any crazy, only could happen here type situations, or was everything pretty consistent and you could count on getting paid when you were supposed to get paid and all that kind of stuff?
No. The money was funny. I had a couple of stops. I was blessed enough not to have too many of those situations, but I had a couple of stops where the money was funny, and it kind of scares you. Especially if it's your first year. So I can see a first year guy going over there and, you know, you need that money. You're sending money back home for bills and stuff like that. I can see why. That's why so many different experiences over there. Once I realized the money is funny, and I can sue to go after that money because it's rightfully mine, and then they pay you for the money you had to kick out to your lawyer to get that back from the team. So my stresses went way down. Your money funny, you have to pay me double. You have to pay more. So kind of wish the money was funny a couple of times.
From what you can tell when those situations with the money, was it malicious in that they were trying to screw you, or was it more bureaucratic that, you know, they just weren't organized, or they were poor business people, stuff like that? Or can you really not tell at this point?
No, I ain't going back there. I'm fine. I don't think I'm going back there. So, no, it was places where combination of both. Very funny money. Some teams over there tell you they have a certain amount of money and they don't have that money. So they'll sign you for a certain amount of money and try to go find it. You'll hear a bunch of tomorrow, next week, or the president is signing papers, or the mayor is coming in town. Like, it's amazing how many excuses you get over there. And there's other times when my money was on time. I got money early in certain situations. So it's definitely funny money depending on your situation over there. Like I said, when the money start getting funny in some of my places, I kind of welcomed it because I know I'm going to get it back. Just a matter of waiting 4 or 5 months, and that's fine because, you know, I've been over there long enough, whereas though I have enough money, whereas though I don't need it at the time. So I think it worked out well.
How much is your agent involved when that's going on? Is your first call to your agent and they try to figure it out?
Yeah. So that's the first call. You know, I know my agent was a little tired of me. I call and he's hearing it. I'm giving him a mouthful. It's not really much he can do besides call. But you call your agent. I think it's a little different now talking to some of the guys from Philadelphia. It's like, it's completely different. I got out right in time. But yeah, my first call is to my agent. Then you try to do things like sit out of practice. Then all Americans get together and sit out of practice because they're not getting paid. Then you got some teams that give a certain American some money and tell them not to tell the rest of them. So now they see you practicing. They're like, what the?
Yeah.
So it's really funny business sometimes in some of those front offices.
What was your favorite overseas experience? Like, what country did you enjoy the most?
I always say Italy. I think I played 3 different times there. Just the food. The food is amazing. Italian food is amazing, especially in the southern part of Italy. I haven't tasted nothing like that to this day. But it was more welcoming. The business was really good. The basketball was great. I think Italy was my favorite spot. I got my most success, I would say, in Italy. So the fans are incredible. I think Italy is number one for me that I've been to.
Other end of the spectrum, worst experience?
I want to say Russia, but I got paid. That was my biggest contract in Russia. So it's kind of bittersweet. But Russia was tough to live. I lived in Moscow. Traffic. Some of these places in America don't got a clue how much traffic it is. So you almost said, if I wanted to go to the grocery store, I have to plan the day before. So it's nothing you could just get up and do because the traffic is so bad. And I had a driver. So he's, Mike, hey, Mike, what we doing? And I could never get him to do nothing 10 to 15 minutes ahead of time. It really had to be 24 hours ahead of time. So that was tough. Not to mention the weather. So it's freezing. It get cold in Philadelphia, but it's never not snow on the floor. Sometimes you get all the way to the summertime and there's still a little snow on the floor. So it's always snow on the ground. And then the sunlight was just crazy, man. Like, you got sunlight from maybe 9 to 12. And then the rest is just dark. So it was a little depressing at times, but outside of that, the basketball was great. It was really good basketball. I played for Kempke Moscow, and that's like maybe the second best team over there outside of Cheska Moscow. So it was cool.
So 12 years, what made you finally decide to hang them up? Was your body starting to break down, or did you just hit the point where the travel, being overseas and all, it just gets to be too much and you're just ready to kind of live a quote-unquote normal life?
Yeah, I tell my friends all the time, like I tell people that know me, like I'm done, I'm tired. 4 years before I even stopped playing basketball. So it wasn't my body. It was more so mental. Then, you know, that kid I told you about was getting older. So now you're missing out on things like plays and little basketball games and stuff like that. So, you know, I made it my business to, once my son hit a certain age, that I would be home with him. And I did it. I stuck to it. COVID was my greatest excuse as well. So once COVID hit, and I was there, I was overseas. Once COVID hit, I was like, okay, this is it. This is it. I entertained offers in 2021. And by that time, I was, you know, I was having my first baby girl. So it was over for me, man. I had so many excuses tied in. I couldn't just say it no more. I had to put it to work, and, you know, I stopped playing.
What is your favorite memory from all those years overseas? Is it basketball, or is it the life in other countries, stuff like that?
I had some good nightlifes. Nightlife in Italy and Milan was amazing. Nightlife in Athens, Greece was amazing. Turkey and Istanbul nightlife was amazing. So I had some really, really fun times hanging out with teammates, hanging out with other Americans that was over there, hanging out with other Philadelphians over there. Got to meet some of the guys that I didn't know at home, but, you know, we came really close over there in Europe. On the court, I had a lot of good times, man. Athens might have been I played for Ike in Athens, and we won the Basketball Champions League. We hosted it at our home, and it was at least 25,000 to 30,000 fans at the championships. And we won that. And, you know, I got the MVP. So that might have been one of the ones that sticks out for me.
Was there a point along that where you thought about taking another shot at the NBA? Or in your mind, had that door closed? Or were you making more money and getting where you would have been taking a chance to come back to the NBA? Like, did you ever completely close the door on that? Or was it just how things played out?
I think I figured it out. Like I said, I learned. So after that first year, your chances get slimmer and slimmer every time. So now you're going into these summer leagues and you can feel that it's not the same.
You're more just kind of a number to fill out the roster?
Yeah, it's not the same. The feel is not the same. So it's more so like your agent talking to somebody, or maybe an assistant that really loves your game is there, and he gets to coach two games that summer league. Five-game summer league, he gets to coach one of them, and he's reaching out to your agent. So it became more transactional at that point, and I realized it really early. And, you know, I just got made Europe my home and got comfortable in it.
How much does all that experience make you a better coach now? Because you are pretty much, I would imagine, open to anything. You can probably relate with all different kinds of kids, regardless of where they're from and stuff like that. Like, I would think that kind of experience really rounds you out when it comes to then coaching and starting to mentor.
Absolutely. I tell the guys that I'm coaching now, it's like the ability to adapt. Like, I adapted every year since high school. Like I said, I had a different coach every year in college. I had a different coach every year in Europe. So I adapted different systems, different personalities, different cultures. So the more you're able to adapt, I tell my guys, the better you are as a player first, and then being able to deal with different things, different cultures, different situations. So adaptability is a huge part of my life, and I try to tell my players to be more acceptable adapting to things.
I know you are relatively new to coaching at the junior college level, but it seems to me, and I've talked to other people and heard other people talk about this, the work you have to do to put together a team is pretty much how everybody has to put mm-hmm. together a team now. Like, very few coaches are putting together rosters with the idea that this kid's going to be here 4 years from now. Do you share ideas with other coaches, like, of roster construction and stuff like that, and how you have started to approach it and learn how to deal with this, like, more on a year-to-year basis?
It's funny how that works, right? Like, junior college usually, you know, frowned upon. Kids still to this day, it's hard convincing some of these kids. You talk to parents, and they're like, my son ain't going to no junior college. And it's just like, well, junior college is the thing now. It will be the thing. It'll be real prominent in people's lives for years to come now. And just now, you know, like I said, I've only been here a year and a half, but now it's at the highest level now. It's like junior college. You got to go recruit your own players after the year. So you got a new team every year now. So it's completely everything is completely like junior college now. So, no, I haven't really talked to those guys at those higher levels about that, but they understand it. They get it, even though they've never been to the junior college level. But, you mean, if you don't get it, you're going to struggle. So they got to have some type of adaptability as well.
Final question. If I pull you aside 20 years ago at Franklin Learning Center and I tell you what your life's going to be like in basketball, would you have believed it?
No, impossible, man. Impossible. Like I said, if you caught me in my 11th grade, I was only thinking about the 12th grade. Like, you know, I really take baby steps with my life. I'm still that way to this day. People always tell me, oh, I need you to do this, I need you to do that. It's like, I can't think past 3 days in advance. Like, it's really hard for me. I don't know why, but I want to get better. If somebody got answers for me, I would love to hear them, but I really can't think further than 3 days. Like, I like to move certain ways, and I'm still that way to this day.
Mike Green, thanks so much for coming in. This was great.
Thanks for having me.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Mike Green, head men's basketball coach at Salem Community College in South Jersey, for coming in studio, being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.